Hello and welcome to the podcast that probably should have thrown in the towel a long time ago, Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is a man who believes that if I can change, and you can change, then everybody can change.
Mike Scriccia. I didn't know how many more people were going to change, so I was going to just let it go for a minute.
It's clearly been a while since you've seen Rocky IV.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
That is a bummer. Also joining us this time around, making his second appearance on the podcast, 8'4" tall, weighing in at approximately 320 pounds, probably, the bearded baby, the singer of theme songs, first of his name, breaker of chains, Kyle Cullen. Welcome back to Film Bookcast.
Thank you for having me back.
Man, that was a very smooth intro. How's it going?
Man, Barry White?
I'm going to do my best to seduce you for the rest of this podcast.
I love it. I'm going to ask you to stop that.
I can stop.
Just because I can't be this visibly aroused the entire time we're recording.
Well, it is an audio medium, so.
True.
You can be as visibly whatever you want.
That's a good point. Now, if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. This week, of course, Kyle will be joining us. After that, we'll move on into our featured review. This week, we are discussing the latest film from director Stephen Caple Jr. and the 8th film in the Rocky/Creed universe, Creed 2. Now, guys, I was very excited about Creed 2. And Kyle, I wanted to have you on the podcast for this because we actually went to a Rocky marathon together. I guess that was 2 years ago at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was back at the Alamo Draft House in Yonkers. And that was all 7 Rocky movies in one day. Rocky.
Oh, that was a long day.
It was a crazy day. One of the most emotional experiences of my entire life.
It was up there.
And then you and I went to go see Creed 2 together when I was back home for Thanksgiving over the break. So, yeah. So I wanted to have you on because we have this this shared Rocky connection. And also, Mike is here.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining us, Mike.
I didn't see you come in.
But one thing I wanted to add, though, is that before that marathon, you had not seen any Rocky movies.
Not one.
Man.
Wow.
So I got them all at once.
Yeah. So when you sat there for that marathon, like, what were you expecting out of Rocky? And like, how did you feel? Were you a changed person afterwards?
I felt older when we left.
You're definitely at least 12 hours older. So there's that.
Yeah. I didn't quite know what to expect. I mean, Rocky's always been like there. Like, I've always known who Rocky is and what the movies are and. I've had like a general knowledge of it, but I didn't quite know what to expect. But man, that was a good day.
That was good.
A good day, and at least 6 good movies.
I mean, out of 7, that's a pretty good average.
That's a pretty good ratio.
It's pretty good average.
I would argue that they're all on there in their own way. Good movies. Rocky. I know you're talking about Rocky V being the bad one, and get it because Rocky V is probably my least favorite of the Rocky films.
Bad.
But there's good stuff in there. There's good stuff in there that people tend to forget about. But anyway, we're going to talk about Rocky and Creed and all that stuff later on in our review of Creed 2. Right now, we're going to get into some film news. It's time for film news here on Film Bookcast, and we begin with some sad news, of course. There was a couple of major film deaths lately, but I wanted to just single out one because this one kind of meant a lot to me. Steven Hillenburg recently passed away. If you don't know that name, he was the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants, and SpongeBob was such a hugely instrumental part of my childhood, but also literally everyone under the age of like 25's childhood, I think.
Yeah.
It's probably and I feel not like wrong that. About that.
The parents of all those people also.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like, we talked about Stan Lee when he died on the last podcast, and, you know, obviously his stuff is a cultural phenomenon. SpongeBob is as big of a cultural phenomenon as Marvel in its own way. It's kind of insane how you can just use SpongeBob references on the internet and people will immediately get it. And that kind of thing. Like, it's the same way. It's like, you know, there's like Simpsons memes and then there's SpongeBob memes. Those are like the two things.
That's the only two languages on the internet.
Exactly.
What is it? SpongeBob, like, in my personal life, it's still super relevant because at work, me and my coworker will just start making, like, riffing on SpongeBob.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just, it's just always there, and we're always talking to each other in SpongeBob voices and Patrick voices, and we're adults.
Yeah, we had a running gag in one of my Dungeons & Dragons games where we weren't officially playing D&D yet until someone made a SpongeBob reference that session. And it happened every time.
Yeah, and Hillenburg was not only the creator of SpongeBob, he was also the showrunner for the first three seasons, which is like the prime SpongeBob years, and directed the first SpongeBob movie, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which is a classic.
Feast your eyes, Patrick.
What is it?
The Paddy Wagon. Mr. Krabs uses it for promotional reasons. Let me show you some of its features. Sesame seed finish, steel-belted pickles, grilled leather interior, and under the hood, a fuel-injected French fryer with dual overhead grease traps.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Hey, I thought you didn't have a driver's license.
You don't need a license to drive a sandwich.
And then, you know, he left the show after that, and there's notably, like, a decline in SpongeBob quality from that point forward. Like, all the classic SpongeBob stuff is the stuff from those first three seasons. And then after that, there's, like, some solid stuff, but it's always, like, a pale imitation of what it was. And I remember I actually went to go see the second SpongeBob movie in theaters, the SpongeBob movie Sponge Out of Water, which was a couple of years ago, 2015, that came out. I went by myself to that movie, and the reason I went is because Steven Hillenburg came back to write some of that movie.
Wow.
And I was just excited about that prospect. And it ended up being pretty good. It's not as good as, you know, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which, again, is a classic.
Gold.
but, anyway, I just wanted to say RIP Steven Hillenburg. That was a kind of a rough blow this past week. Although, I think it was reported today, his ashes were spread across the ocean in tribute to SpongeBob, which I thought was kind of
nice.
But anyway, yeah, let's move on from that and get into the actual film news for this week. I wanted to talk about this. Are you guys either of you fans of the Resident Evil movies?
No.
That's the best response I could have possibly asked for.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
No. Yeah, I mean, I've seen the first two. I don't even know if I've seen the entirety of the second one, but I've definitely seen the first one and like some of the second one. And yeah, they're not good movies, and there ended up being like seven of them. And the last one was just last year, right? I think it was last year, Resident Evil The Final Chapter. That's what it was called.
That's the one that, like, killed the stunt double. Do you remember that?
Don't remember
that. Oh, yeah.
I don't think she died, but she was very seriously injured in a, like, very preventable, like, somebody didn't do their job kind of stunt injury. Yeah.
But anyway, outside of that, I mean, this is just a dumb series of movies. But now, they're rebooting Resident Evil a year and a half after the last movie came out. Which is
why not?
Quite a quick turnaround.
You know, I gotta say, I think it's about time.
It's quite, like, you know, we joke about how quickly Sony will reboot Spider-Man or something like that. But even they waited like 3 years between Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man Homecoming, right? This is like literally a year and a half later, they're already hard at work on a Resident Evil reboot. And it's from the director of 47 Meters Down, Johannes Roberts, which was a Shark Attack movie that had its moments, but like it wasn't good. You know, it was not a particularly good movie. And then he also did the new The Strangers sequel, Strangers Pray at Night, which I've heard kind of mixed things about. Have not seen that yet. But are you guys into the idea of a rebooted Resident Evil, like one that could potentially be more like the actual games?
I would be into it if it was someone like James Wan or like some established, like Fede Alvarez maybe, or somebody like that. Somebody that has like an established, maybe Fede Alvarez doesn't fit into that, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like a prime horror director, because those are very scary games. The first, especially the first two. So if we went that route, I would feel more confident. This seems like it's probably just going to be another like B grade schlocky horror movie. Like they were.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like they weren't, though, because they kind of became, like, action sci-fi movies.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's kind of what they ended up being when the movie version. So I think this reboot is a potential way to kind of be more like the games and be more horror-oriented. So I guess we'll just see what happens. Like, who knows if this even ever comes to pass? Who knows if the demand is there?
I personally think I'm as interested in a reboot as I was the originals. So... Not at all.
Not very much. fair enough. Well, let's talk about something that we are interested in, Guys,
Shrek
I know.
Shrek 5?
God damn it. No,
it's
we're not
happening.
Shrek 5.
Damn.
Although, word is that it's happening. We talked about that like 2 episodes ago, something like that. No, we have to talk about a movie that I'm very excited to go see in about a week and a half from this point, is when it opens up. It's getting phenomenal reviews across the board, and that is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that close. Oh, that's so close.
Buckle up, kid.
Yeah, do you need to take a break and relieve yourself, Kyle?
No, I just need to find my center.
Yeah. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse comes out a week and a half from now. It's getting glowing reviews. Like I think it still has 100% of Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of people are calling it one of the best movies of the entire year. I absolutely cannot wait for this movie. It is so extremely my shit. It's insane. And now Sony is bolstered by that critical acclaim, and they are developing an Into the Spider-Verse sequel, which I guess we should have seen coming, but they're also developing a spin-off called Spider-Women, which is going to focus on three generations of Spider-Women, including Spider-Gwen, who is in Into the Spider-Verse. This could also include the actual Spider-Woman. It could include Silk. This could include a lot of different characters, actually. Mayday Parker. Maybe Mayday Parker could be in this movie. I would be so down for this. And apparently Phil Lord and Chris Miller are likely involved with both projects because they're also heavily involved with Into the Spider-Verse. So, yeah, guys, I just want to hear your thoughts. How excited are you for Spider-Verse and also for these potential projects?
Just give me all the spider people. All of them.
Correct.
I'll take them all.
I will not rest until I have a Spider-Ham solo movie. That is,
dude. Give me a Spider-Ham like Netflix TV show, so
oh
I can
my
like.
God,
I'd watch it every day.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just very exciting for me because Spider-Verse was like when I got into comics. I was really into comics when I was in college. For about 2 years. That's when I was like buying them every week. And the what got me back into them was when they kind of relaunched Spider-Man with a new number one. And that was right after like Superior Spider-Man had ended. Peter Parker was back as Spider-Man. And it was a really great run. And that's when they did the Spider-Verse storyline. And I went all in on the Spider-Verse. I own every single Spider-Verse book that there was during that time period. Like every tie-in book that there was. There was a lot of them. And I own all of them. They're all back at my house in New York.
Such a nerd.
I know. So so when I found out that they were developing a Spider-Verse movie, I freaked out. And then I found out, and then, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller were involved, and I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. I'm just so excited for this and for any potential. it really seems like Sony has, like, a real winner on their hands with this one. I'm very excited.
I think it would be a bold strategy for them to sort of abandon the live-action Venomverse that they're established, you know, like that version of Spider-Man that doesn't have Spider-Man in it.
Right.
And just go, like, ham. Go Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham. Thank you.
I got it. Got it in two. Yep. On, like, an animated Spider-Man universe, I think that would be amazing.
Yes.
That would be so much better because the best part about Venom was like the 5 minutes of Spider-Verse that they showed after the credits.
No, it definitely was. Pretty excited about that. And pretty excited about the possibility of a Spider-Women spinoff focusing on Spider-Gwen.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I know Mike, specifically, I know you're a huge fan of Spider-Gwen, right?
Yeah. I'm so pumped to see her in this movie. And if she might be a lead in, like, their own movie, like, in her own movie, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, so definitely psyched about that. And while we're talking about a Marvel property, you got to talk about Marvel Studios, because we always do. Marvel is developing a movie based on the character Shang-Chi. And this is not a character that I think most people are familiar with, but he's an Asian martial arts character, and this will be their first superhero movie with an Asian protagonist. And I think the idea here is that Marvel saw the success they had with Black Panther, with the first black superhero movie that they've had in their studio, how huge of a cultural phenomenon that movie was, and then they saw the success of Crazy Rich Asians, which was also a pretty big deal, and had the first all-Asian cast in a Hollywood movie in like 15 years or something like that. And so now they're like, well, let's just do this. This seems like this makes logical sense. I think this could be pretty big. Like, I did not know the character Shang-Chi, and I don't think either of you guys do either. This seems like a lower level Marvel character.
But so was Guardians, though.
So was Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, you're right. I am eager to see what Marvel can spin out of this the thing. Because I was like, you know, you point out Guardians of the Galaxy, but when they talked about like Black Panther, like at least Black Panther was a character that like I knew about. Like that was a character that I was familiar with, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Guardians, I really didn't know anything about them until they hired James Gunn to make the first one. And so it was like, all right, here we go, Guardians. So yeah, I think Shang-Chi could be a pretty cool character. I think he was introduced in the 70s as kind of like, you know, during the height of that Kung Fu cinema era where like Bruce Lee was a huge star and that kind of thing. So Shang-Chi is kind of modeled after those kind of actors and movies. And I think there could be some really cool stuff going on here. I know Marvel is looking for an Asian director to work on this movie as well, which totally makes sense. It's currently being written by David Callahan, who is also a co-writer on Wonder Woman 1984. So there's that. So yeah, we'll follow that as it goes on, but it seems like this movie's on the fast track, so it could come out like, you know, within the next couple of years. I think Marvel wants to make this movie happen pretty soon.
Cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that is the Shang-Chi Marvel news, and then finally got one last bit of film news here, and that is that the Golden Globe nominations were announced this morning, guys. Did you stay up and you know, wake up at 5 a.m. and watch the Golden Globe nominations?
Oh, you know me, Mike. Of course I did.
With bated breath.
Yeah, no, I actually had no idea they were supposed to be announced this morning, but yeah, there was a ceremony this morning where Terry Crews, Danai Gurira, Leslie Mann, and Christian Slater you know, announced the Golden Globe nominations. Also, yesterday it was announced that the host of the Golden Globes will be Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh. And I'm pretty excited about that. It seems like a weird duo.
Interesting.
But if you had watched the Emmys this past year, you'll know that those two actually presented together during one award. And they were hilarious for like the minute that they were on stage together. And I actually even tweeted out during the Emmys, like, Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg should host the Emmys next year. And now they're hosting the Golden Globes. So, like, somebody at the Golden Globes is reading my Twitter feed. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they listen.
Thank God.
We were supposed to come out here and read the winner, but instead I've decided to speak from the heart.
Why'd you rip the envelope?
I don't know. I was in the moment. I got overwhelmed.
Now, how are we going to know who the winner is?
Oh, my God. I shouldn't have done that. Should we just make it up?
No, I don't think we can do that.
The winner is La La Land.
No, don't say that. Anything but that. Just give me the sides.
Jeremy Park.
Who's Jeremy Park?
A guy I dated in high school.
You think he won the award for directing a comedy?
Well, we lost touch. I mean, he could be doing anything.
All right, give me that.
I miss you, Jeremy.
Come on!
Anyway, so I want to go through some of the nominees from the Golden Globes, because they are the Golden Globes. The Globes are going to globe. And
they'll be golden?
And they will be golden. Yeah, so a lot of people were kind of upset about the nominees for this year. And I get it. There's some that like don't really make a ton of sense. I mean, I think they all make sense within the context of the Golden Globes. There's none like... You know, there's no, like, The Tourist this year, I think. There's no, like, you know... Did you know... I was looking back at some of the old nominees, and I saw the year 2010, which is the year I kind of, like, first started paying attention to, like, these kind of award shows and stuff. I was already watching the Oscars every year, but, like, I started watching the Golden Globes around the same time. And in 2010, that was the year The Tourist was nominated. Alice in Wonderland was nominated for musical or comedy. Like Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland was nominated for Best Picture.
But why?
On top of that, Red was also nominated for Best Picture.
Like, were there just no movies?
Why?
It was very weird. So compared to that, like, this year doesn't seem like that bad to me. But there, you know, there are stuff that like I would probably get rid of in favor of other stuff. But anyway, in the Best Drama category, and I should point out the Globes, as always, has split the categories. So it's drama and Best Picture, musical or comedy. So it's 10 movies nominated total, 5 in each category. In the drama category, you've got A Star Is Born, which, you know, that was a lock. If Beale Street Could Talk, which is the new Barry Jenkins movie. I have not seen that one yet. Pretty excited to check it out. Bohemian Rhapsody, which is I tweeted this today. The Bohemian Rhapsody is the most Golden Globes movie of all time. It's just is the movie that defines the Golden Globes to me. It's obviously it's going to get Golden Globe nominations. Black Klansman, Spike Lee movie. And Black Panther, nominated in the Best Drama category. Which makes sense because it would be weird if it was nominated in the musical or comedy category, but it's just weird that it's in the drama category, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but remember that time The Martian won that?
In the musical or comedy category. Yeah, it was the best musical of that year. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's interesting. I think, you know, the inclusion of Bohemian Rhapsody is the one that's like, you know, one of these things is a lot weaker than the other ones. I mean, I've seen all of these except for If Beale Street Could Talk, because that hasn't opened near me yet. I am excited about the idea that Black Panther's nominated, because that's, you know, a heavy favorite to get an Oscar nomination for Best Picture, and this is a pretty good step towards getting that.
This is just a scary thought that I just had, that 2018 has been so long, Black Panther came out this year.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
Wow.
Are we living in the center of a black hole? I'm so confused.
Black Panther hole. But anyway, so yeah, I am excited about the idea that Black Panther could get nominated for Best Picture awards because it's pretty cool. You know, it's pretty neat.
Best
popular picture.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Exactly. And then there's the best musical or comedy section, and that goes Crazy Rich Asians, The Favourites, Green Book, Mary Poppins Returns, and Vice. Now, of all those, I've actually only seen Crazy Rich Asians so far because The Favourite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Vice have not opened near me yet, and Green Book, I think, just opened near me this weekend, so I haven't had the chance to check it out. But I've heard amazing things about The Favourite. And I've heard pretty mixed things about Green Book. Like, positive-ish, but, like, yeah, there's definitely some pushback on that one. Vice, I've heard kind of mixed things about, too. I'm excited to see it. I think it looks very good, but I've heard mixed things.
I just want to see fat Christian Bale.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you can see American Hustle for that, actually.
That's true.
Anyway, so Crazy Rich Asians is a pretty good movie. I get why it's included here. And then there's Mary Poppins Returns, which has actually been making a lot of, like, critic groups' top 10 lists and things like that, which I was surprised about, but haven't seen it, so I can't judge that yet. So those are the nominees there. Can't really say much about them because I have not seen most of those movies. And then in the actor and actress category, I'll try to go through these as fast as I can. Actor in a drama, Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Lucas Hedges in Boy Erased, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, and John David Washington for Black Klansman. So I will say that if Bohemian Rhapsody has to be nominated for an award, Rami Malek's performance is probably the one I would try to nominate outside of like, a sound award. Otherwise, Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, like, he's just doing Jeff Bridges. It's not it's not something that I was particularly impressed by. But,
is he specifically doing Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart? Because then he'll win an Oscar.
That's a good point. And he's going to win an Oscar anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Best actress in a drama, you got Glenn Close in The Wife, Lady Gaga for A Star is Born, Nicole Kidman for Destroyer, Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Rosamund Pike for A Private War. Have not seen most of those yet, but Lady Gaga, you know, sure. And Melissa McCarthy, also, sure. I think they're both fine additions to the category, whatever. Best actor in a comedy or musical, Christian Bale in Vice. Lin-Manuel Miranda in Mary Poppins Returns, Viggo Mortensen for Green Book, Robert Redford for The Old Man and the Gun, and John C. Reilly for Stan and Ollie. And I was pretty excited to see Robert Redford in there. I think that's a really good performance, and it's theoretically his last one, so that's pretty cool to see. Christian Bale, obviously, he's going to be nominated. He changed his entire... He does not look like Christian Bale in that movie. Pretty excited to see Lin-Manuel Miranda, just because he's my boy. And John C. Reilly and Stan and Ollie, I've not seen that much about, but I've heard it's pretty good. It's where John C. Reilly and I think Steve Coogan play Laurel and Hardy in that movie, and it sounds pretty cool. Best actress in a musical or comedy, Emily Blunt, Mary Poppins Returns, Olivia Colman for The Favourite, Elsie Fisher for Eighth Grade, Charlize Theron for Tully, and Constance Wu for Crazy Rich Asians. Don't have much to add there, except I liked seeing Elsie Fisher in there for Eighth Grade. She gives an amazing performance. And also Charlize Theron for Tully. I thought that was going to get overlooked this year, but yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, and then we could probably just skip the rest.
Who's got best sound editing?
Golden Globes does not have a sound editing category.
Right.
So.
What's the point of this award show?
You tested, never mind, forget it.
Yeah, I tested it and you passed, or whatever.
Correct.
I will say there was an original score award. A Quiet Place is nominated there, as Isle of Dogs, Black Panther, First Man, and Mary Poppins Returns. Some good scores in there, actually. First Man I would probably give it to, but Black Panther is really good, too. And yeah, good stuff there. Best original song, A Star is Born is going to win that, so what's the point of even reading them?
Who cares?
And best director, we should talk best director, which is Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born, Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Peter Farrelly for Green Book, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, and Adam McKay for Vice. I think I have not seen Green Book yet. I've seen a lot of people say that you could probably take Peter Farrelly out and replace him with somebody else, possibly a female director, because once again, no female directors made it into the Golden Globes, which is weird because last year that was a big thing where it's like they didn't make it into the Golden Globes category. And this year, same deal. And this year, I mean, you could have given it to Lynn Ramsey, who did You Were Never Really Here, and that movie was very good and very well directed. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. Do you guys have any opinions on these nominees at all? I know neither of you are going to watch the Golden Globes.
Oh, you know me so well.
I eagerly await the episode where you tell me who won.
I can't wait to listen to that one.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, well, you'll be hearing that one Pretty soon, actually. The Golden Globes are in January, January 6th, like pretty early. So, actually, I think everything's earlier this year. I think the Oscars are going a few weeks earlier than they usually are. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. Also, I want to throw out there that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is nominated for Best Animated Feature Film. Very excited about that movie.
So if it doesn't win, we riot, right?
Exactly. We have not seen the movie yet, but we riot. That's exactly what's going to happen. All right, so that is the Golden Globe nomination. Just wanted to kind of go through some of those real quick. And now let's move on into our discussions. Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions. All right, it's time to get into our discussions on Film Bookcast today. Kyle, you are the guest, so you have the floor. What do you want to discuss?
All right, you guys are not going to believe this. But I'm talking about F is for Family again.
So last time when you were on the podcast, when we talked about Mission Impossible, your discussion was F is for Family, which is the animated Netflix show starring Bill Burr and Laura Dern. And now you're talking about F is for Family again, presumably because there was new episodes to talk about, right?
Yep. Season 3 just came out on the 30th, I believe. So just out for a couple days. I watched it all this past weekend and it's great. It's just so funny. Vince Vaughn is on this season playing an Air Force pilot, moves in to the neighborhood that Frank lives in with his family. And it's just so fantastic. It's so well written and just so goddamn funny.
All right, cool.
I can't recommend it enough.
Awesome. So that is F is for Family. And you didn't mention this last time, and I found this out later, but Sam Rockwell is also on this show.
Did I not say that?
You did not say that. You mentioned, you know, Bill Burr and Laura Dern. But if you had told me that, like, Laura Dern and Sam Rockwell were on the same show, I would have, like, immediately, like, cut the podcast short and run to go watch it.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell's character, Vic, is a... He plays a disc jockey in the 70s. And he's, like, when that was, like, a profitable job.
Right.
So he's got, like, the biggest house in the neighborhood.
What is that?
Yeah, get
that's exactly what that was, Mike. And he's got, like, the biggest house in the neighborhood and a convertible. And in this season, he flies a helicopter. And he's just always coked up and, like, a fucking maniac. And it's he plays it so well. It's great.
Awesome. Okay, so, yeah, that is F is for Family. Season 3 is on Netflix right now. You have anything else, Kyle, before we move on?
I've been watching The Great British Baking Show a lot.
Is that because your girlfriend's watching The Great British Baking Show?
Fiancé. Thank you very much. And no. A friend of ours introduced us to it, and it's, like, way more entertaining than I was expecting.
Okay.
I think it's just because it's not like American baking shows where they're all, like, super competitive and mean to each other.
I've actually heard a lot about that, and I've heard it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun watching these people bake, and they're all, like, super friendly, and when someone wins, they all clap, and they're not playing for money. They're not competing for money. So it's cool just watching these people be British and friendly.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't really watch, like, any cooking shows, so I don't know, like, you know, how they usually go. Except I do know that they usually are pretty competitive. That's an interesting twist, that they're just, like, nice about it. So that's cool. That's the Great British Baking Show, and it's also on Netflix, right?
It is also on Netflix.
All right, cool. Mike, what do you got to discuss today?
I have two things to discuss. First of which is the new Mystery Science Theater 3000 season that dropped on Thanksgiving Day.
Ladies and gentlemen, of the world stage, prepare to witness the most mind-bending act of movie riffing ever attempted.
I present to you The Gauntlet.
The Gauntlet?
Six terrible movies ripped one after the other.
Can Jonah Heston, his robot jerks, and you at home survive six horrible movies back to back? We can't rip six movies in a row. Our brains will melt.
Our souls will implode.
And now to binge the unbingeable binge.
Punch something.
Flush them, the movie.
Yes, I've also been watching this. I'm 3 episodes in.
It's great. It's the same thing. The whole shtick, they really leaned into the Netflix thing this time where it's The Gauntlet. It's six movies that are
But you gotta say it right. It's the gauntlet.
The gauntlet, yeah. I forgot the hand motion. Sorry
the hand
for
motions.
The audio medium. and it's, you know, supposed to be binged, or like the whole, you know, the outlining sketches within each episode, or as if it's being done all at once in one go. And it's more Mystery Science Theater stuff. If you like Mystery Science Theater, you're gonna like it. I think the first episode of Mac and Me is a Mystery Science Theater classic. It's up there with Pooh Man and Final Sacrifice for me.
I'm going to have to get into this.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I think this would be a good season to like jump in on because it is only 6 episodes. Not that there really is like a story that you need to really worry about.
Yeah.
My only little bit complaint is I feel like it peaks with Mac and Me. I feel like none of the other episodes quite live up to that. But they are still pretty good. Like, there's still another couple that are really good. I think Atlantic Rim, which is the second episode, which is the Asylum movies. I think they're the guys that make, like, Sharknado and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Hated it. Terrible. I hate everything about that. I mean, the jokes are funny, but, like, I couldn't get over how bad the movie was.
Yeah.
That it was enough to make it not, like, make the whole episode, to me, not good, which is insane. I can't believe that's the thing. But, yeah, it's a fun time.
Yeah.
Mystery Science Theater. Watch.
Yeah, I'm halfway through, so I've watched Mac and Me, Atlantic Rim, and Lords of the Deep. Lords of the Deep was really funny. I like that one.
I like that one too.
But yeah, Mac and Me is definitely my favorite so far. It's so perfect. Like everything. Yeah. And it's weird because Mac and Me is a really high profile like bad movie. Like usually with Mystery Science Theater, they're bad movies, but they're usually ones you've never heard of before. And with Mac and Me, it's like, oh, I've known Mac and Me for a very long time. It's the movie that Paul Rudd always brings to Conan and that kind of thing. And, you know, and so I was wondering how they were going to tackle it because it's like, how, you know, it's a pretty well-known movie. But it's so good. The riffs are so strong. And I think this season so far, I will agree with you that the Atlantic Rim one is kind of weaker. But I think the riffs are really strong. And I think this season I might like it. I mean, I'm only halfway through, but I think I like it a little bit more than the first comeback season, which was 14 episodes, and I feel like there are definitely like I loved a lot of episodes in that season, but there are some duds in there, you know. And when you get a dud episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's like you're not only just watching a dud episode of a TV show, you're also watching a really bad movie.
Double whammy,
you know.
Yeah, so. I think it's this season's a little bit. It seems like they took a lot of advice from the first one, you know, the return, which was the last season. Where that was breakneck speed, there's cameos every episode. Like, they were like, couldn't believe it happened. They did, like, everything.
Yes.
And this one, it seems like they took a little more time. It's a little more precise. The jokes are, you know, slower. You can hear them. Like, because there's not rapid-fire riffs anymore.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think it's a nice installment in the history of Mystery Science Theater.
Yes.
And the second, well, I'll run through the movies real quick because it's only 6. Mac and Me, Atlantic Rim, Lords of the Deep, The Daytime Ended, Killer Fish, and Ator, which has some subtitle that's not listed on this.
Okay.
And it's interesting that they're all like ripoffs. I think that's a cool theme. Like they're all some kind of knockoff.
Right.
That's cool, I guess. Anyway, the second movie I have is Outlaw King, the new Netflix, or within the last month, I think.
Right.
Netflix original starring Chris Pine. I forget who it's directed by. The guy that directed Hell or High Water.
David McKenzie is his name.
David McKenzie, that guy. And this is a historical fiction, or maybe not historical fiction, but it's a historical movie about Chris Pine plays the guy that becomes King of Scotland after the events of Braveheart. basically. Like, William Wallace is not in this, but, like, they talk about him a lot.
So this is Braveheart 2, is what you're saying.
I, like, kind of, yeah, though. this is the Game of Thrones-style sequel of Braveheart.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It leans into the, you know, like, that kind of the Game of Thrones-style like gritty realism medieval times where like everything is covered in mud and like people die very brutally and slowly. It is, so it is very violent, which like is kind of cool. I feel like there aren't so many of these kinds of movies. Like I just recently watched Highlander, which has a lot of things that kind of take place in this kind of medieval Scotland era where it's like big silly fantasy version, and this is like, no, this is real. People are starving and dying and stuff. So it's fine, I guess. Chris Pine has a passable Scottish accent. It's there for most of the movie, so that's more than enough, I guess.
Okay, sure.
That's good.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fun. I think this would not have succeeded as a theatrical release just because it I don't think it quite lives up to that. You know, if I had paid $12 to see this, I might be upset. But because I watched it on my couch for free, like, yeah, I'm in. It's fine. It's only an hour and a half, I think. Maybe it's 2 hours. I don't remember. So I guess that's good. That's a good sign that I wasn't counting minutes, right?
All right, yeah. I actually haven't heard that much about Outlaw King. There's been a couple of other, like, more high-profile Netflix originals lately with the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Roma coming out, Other Side of the Wind, and that kind of stuff. But I did hear Outlaw King was, like, solid, so there's that. And now I heard again from you.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It actually, I was really impressed. It opens with, I think, a 10-minute... or at least edited to look like a single take.
Okay.
I think it is. There's no, like, you know, it's not like, oh, we walk into a, you know, past a dark thing so we could cut here if we need to. There's none of that going on. So I think it might be a single take. And it was really cool. So that, like, I was, like, pumped when, like, oh, yeah, here we go. We're going to do this. And then, like, nothing quite lives up to that.
Okay.
Like, as exciting as, like, I don't know, I get really pumped when I have, like, see a one-take shot.
Sure. Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah. This is a film nerd podcast, by the way.
Exactly.
There is a lot of really beautiful, cool cinematography stuff. A lot of, who does this a lot? Oh, my God. I blanked on his name. The guy that makes all the British crime movies. Guy Ritchie. There we go. Where it's like a fixed, like a camera fixed on one point while they're running or moving and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not quite like Guy Ritchie does it, but there's like certain things that are come up that are have that look sort of. So that was cool. So it's a good movie. Check it out.
Cool. All right. That is The Outlaw King, available on Netflix right now. And then I've got a bunch of discussions I want to talk about. I have 6 movies here. Before I actually get into that, I wanted to give a shout out to 2 movies that I watched on the plane coming back and forth from Montana to New York. I don't know if you guys ever, like, plan out your plane movies specifically, but I always, like, they have to be a movie that, like, I kind of wanted to see but don't care that much about. And so the movies that I ended up choosing were Tag and Tomb Raider. And Tag was pretty funny.
Endorsement.
Yeah, Tag was pretty enjoyable. You know, solid movie, like solid comedy. I think Colin talked about it on the podcast when he was on the show. Solid ensemble, funny stuff. I will say that it was heavily censored on the plane. I don't think there's any nudity in Tag, but there is a lot of cursing. And it was hilarious. We're just watching it censored in that way. Like, there's a bit where they meet up with Thomas Middleditch, and he's clearly saying "suck your dicks," but what it changed it to was "sink your docks." And it made no sense. It was amazing.
That's incredible.
And the other movie I watched was Tomb Raider, the new reboot starring Alicia Vikander, which came out, I think, in, like, March. And I kind of wanted to see when it came out, but, again, just never got around to it. And so I will say the first, like, 20 minutes of this movie, they're, like, solid. It's a solid setup. And then it becomes, like, a pretty generic action movie from that point forward and a pretty bad one at that. So...
is Walton Goggins in that movie?
He is, and it's a real bummer.
Good?
He's fine. Like he's not going Gogginsy enough. Like when you saw him like later that year in Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? Like a few months later, he was in that movie. He's going like not full Goggins, I would say, but he's going like eight tenths Goggins in that movie, and that's like a good amount of Goggins. You want a good amount of Goggins if you're going to cast Walton Goggins in your movie. All I'm going to say. You know, full Goggins, I would say, that's Justified, that's, you know, The Hateful Eight, that is Vice Principals, like, that's full Goggins to me. Tomb Raider completely wastewalled Goggins, and it's a damn shame. And I was somebody who actually, I played the video game, the rebooted video game, which this movie kind of takes its cues from, and so a lot of the setup and, like, the basic plot of the movie is similar to the game. But it kind of takes away a lot of the stuff that made the game interesting and fun. and so, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Nick Frost is also in it for, like, a minute, so, like, that's fun. Yeah, weird. Just, like, a weird, like, funny, like, cameo bit. But anyway, yeah, so that's Tag and Tomb Raiders, the plane movies that I watched. Let's get into my actual discussions. First one I wanted to talk about is The Other Side of the Wind.
You can't afford
the Ernest Hemingway of the cinema.
Mr. Hannaford, I just want to know what he represents.
The man is infested with disciples. I'm the apostle.
Just like me and God, how could you tell us apart?
Hannaford's new movie?
The Other Side of the Wind.
What's that about the movie?
We don't talk about the movie.
So you old guys are trying to get with it.
Is that what this movie's about?
Which, Mike, I believe we've talked about in the podcast before when they announced this movie was being made. This is the legendary movie that was meant to be Orson Welles' final film. This was produced in the 70s, and it just never came together. Like, they filmed most of it, and then it kind of sat around. Like, Orson Welles was working on it through the last years of his life, and it just never happened. Like, the production never finished and all that stuff. So it's pretty remarkable that it exists now, and it's actually, like, coherent.
Yes.
It's pretty wild. It's a really remarkable, like, avant-garde work that is almost certainly, I think, as close as possible to what Welles originally intended this movie to be. And as, like, you know, a film geek, this is, like, one of those legendary movies you hear about, like, you know, in the same breath as, like, The Day the Clown Cried or something. Like, one of those movies that, like, you know, you just hear about all the time, but you never think you're going to ever get to see. And now The Other Side of the Wind is available on Netflix. It's crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah, and so this stars John Huston, who died years ago, like decades ago, as a sort of like stand-in for Orson Welles. He plays a film director, and Peter Bogdanovich plays his protege in this movie. And it's about like this movie premiere, and it shows the movie within the movie, and it shows the people who are watching the movie, and it's good. You know, it's understandably a little all over the place, and it's kind of rough sometimes. There's literally stuff where like it'll just go to a black screen and say shot missing. And then move on to the next thing. And that,
wow. You know,
it happens like that. But it's, I think, a really enjoyable experience to watch it. And I would really recommend watching, if you're going to watch it, the 40-minute documentary, which is attached to it. So if you go in the Trailers and More section on Netflix, there's like a special feature documentary, which is attached to it, which shows you how this movie came together and like how they edited it all together. And there's like stuff that like blew my mind in that movie. And it gives you like a full appreciation for all the work that went into putting The Other Side of the Wind together in its final form. It's pretty wild.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the documentary if you watched it. I haven't got a chance to watch either of these, but I know that there it came with, like, they also released, what is it, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, I think, or something?
Right. That's a separate documentary, which I have not watched. Yeah.
I thought that's what you were talking about.
No. There's a 40-minute documentary, which is about the editing of the movie and, like, actually putting together, like, the final pieces of it. Which is what I watched, and that's in the Trailers and More section. But if you go to Netflix, there's a separate documentary, which is its own thing, called They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, which is actually about Orson Welles during the making of The Other Side of the Wind. So yeah, there's a lot of it's weird. There's a lot of Other Side of the Wind content on Netflix right now, but Netflix is not promoting it like at all. And it's like this is a major film landmark that you've assembled here. You should like let people know that it exists. Yeah,
this should have been on Filmstruck. Filmstruck should exist still, and it should have been on Filmstruck.
I don't think Filmstruck would have had the money to put this together.
That's fair.
But, 100%, this should have been on Filmstruck. This would have been. But, yeah, that is The Other Side of the Wind. It's a pretty remarkable kind of just film history achievement. So I'd recommend checking that out on Netflix when you get a chance. Otherwise, I want to talk about some other 2018 movies I've seen. The first is Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is the new movie directed by Marielle Heller, who directed a movie a few years ago called The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which I liked. I thought it was pretty good. This stars Melissa McCarthy in a true story as Lee Israel, who was an author who made money by forging letters from dead literary figures. Have you guys seen the trailer for this movie?
I think I saw the trailer, but I had no idea what it was about.
I didn't see the trailer, but I saw the book at a bookstore and I read the back flap, so I know basically
so,
what it is.
So like you've basically seen it.
Yeah.
This movie's been getting pretty good reviews. I know some people who are like really big fans of this. I think it's fine. McCarthy's pretty good in it. Richard E. Grant is also very good as like her gay friend. But it's not something like I think I'm going to come back to anytime soon. It's just like it's a pleasant experience, I guess. And then I saw a movie called Wildlife, which is a new movie directed by Paul Dano. And written by Paul Dano and Zoe Kazan. They've been married for many years now, and they co-wrote this movie together. And this movie's terrific. It's so good. And I feel like it's kind of got swept. Like, I feel like not a lot of people know that this movie exists. But it's a drama about a family who's just struggling after the father loses his job. Jake Gyllenhaal plays the father. Carey Mulligan plays the mother. Carey Mulligan, by the way, amazing in this movie. And basically the family, you know, the dad loses his job after he moves the entire family out to Montana. And as somebody who lives in Montana now, I was like, hey, that's the place where I live.
I get it.
And it often takes shots at Montana. Carey Mulligan's like, why would anyone move to such a lonely place? And I was like, hey, come on. I'm right here.
People never say anything bad about New York in movies, Mike.
True.
Shouldn't have left.
But But yeah, anyway, Wildlife is a terrific drama. I think Carey Mulligan's genuinely like, I would give her an Oscar like nomination at least for this movie. Ed Oxenbould's also the kid in the movie, who's kind of the main character, and he was the kid who was in The Visit a few years ago, the rapping kid.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Does he rap?
He does not rap. This movie takes place in the 60s. which I'm sure is the only reason why he doesn't rap in the movie.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Wildlife. I thought this movie was pretty fantastic. And then I want to talk about the new movie from Disney Animation, Ralph Breaks the Internet, the new sequel to Wreck-It Ralph. And have you guys have seen Wreck-It Ralph, right?
Yes.
I actually have never seen Wreck-It Ralph.
Really? It sounds like, Mike, you're a big fan of Wreck-It Ralph.
Are you not?
I mean, I like it.
I mean, like, yeah, it's cool. It's great.
Yeah, I have nothing against it. That was downplaying it now.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big gasp of horror that he hadn't seen Wreck-It Ralph. That's all I'm saying. Ralph Breaks the Internet is the sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, and this one kind of ditches the video game setting. There is some of that in the beginning. But it ditches the video game setting in favor of the internet. I think I like this about the same as the first one. I think sometimes, like, the brand integration of the internet stuff can be, like, tacky and dated. Like, you know, I think this movie greatly overestimates, like, how excited I'm going to be to go see, like, oh, it's the logo for Snapchat in the corner or something.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. You know, whereas, like, when it's Wreck-It Ralph and it's like, hey, it's Sonic the Hedgehog, that's amazing. But when it's like, oh, it's the Instagram logo, great. So, like, that...
It's a company, not a character.
Exactly. But then they do have other characters. There is some brand integration here regarding Disney. And I was pretty cynical about that going into this movie. Like, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. But honestly, some of that's like the best stuff in the movie. It's this, you know, a bit in the movie where Sarah Silverman's character, Vanellope, goes to ohmydisney.com. And that's where you see, like, Marvel stuff and Star Wars stuff and the Disney princess scene, which, like, that's like the famous bit in the movie already, is like, that's what everybody's been talking about online. The Disney princess scene, really funny. It's actually this really fun, like, meta Disney stuff going on here. Like the way Ariel will just start singing, like, randomly, there's a bit where they all see, like, they're all dressed in, like, ball gowns and stuff, but then they see Vanellope's clothes and it's like a sweatshirt and sweatpants, and like, hey, that seems awesome, we should all be wearing comfy clothes all the time. And then Ariel, like, does like a thing where she's like, it's like, what, and she does the what's the word, shirt, and like that kind of thing.
That's amazing.
So there's like funny meta stuff like that. Actually, there's one great bit, I don't even know if I should, like, spoil it, but I'm going to. sorry. A lot of the stuff's already available online anyway, but there's, in that princess scene, towards the end of it, Merida from Brave starts talking, and it's just that thick Scottish accent, and it's just, like, this unintelligible sentence, and you can't hear her, and then, like, you know, Vanellope, like, pretends to know what she's saying, and the other princess is like, yeah, we can never understand her either, she's from the other studio. And, like, that kind of thing. So, like, there's funny stuff going on there, you know.
That's awesome.
Does she sound like, what's his name, Willie from The Simpsons?
no, well, it's actually, the thing about that is, like, all the princesses are voiced by their original voice actors.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's Kelly MacDonald doing, you know, one line as Merida and that kind of thing. And, you know, the same, it's, like, Idina Menzel and Kristen Bell from Frozen and all that, like, you know, not, like, the older princesses, like Snow White and Cinderella, obviously, are not the same, but... But, like,
sure.
But they're the people who have been doing it for years anyway. Like, you know, Disney kind of has, like, those people on call.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's pretty funny. Also, Gal Gadot is in this movie, playing a very similar role to her role from the Fast and the Furious movies. So I was pretty excited about that, actually. And there's, you know, some good stuff throughout the movie. John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman are also really great. And it develops the characters in ways that don't feel like a retread, which is good. I enjoyed the movie. I think it's too long. It's like 2 hours, and it's like, you know, a kid's movie, I feel like 90 minutes is a perfect runtime, and this is like way too long, and the credits are really long. There's an after credit scene, which is why I stayed for the credits. It's not worth it. Don't stay for the after credit scene.
Good to know.
But yeah, anyway, that is Ralph Breaks the Internet. Solid time. I enjoyed it. And I wasn't, like, I was expecting to basically enjoy it, but, you know, I was a little worried about it just because of the whole, like, the Disney stuff felt a little cynical to me at first and all that, but, I was into it. Now I want to talk about a movie that, rocked my fucking socks.
I like where this is going.
Yeah, this is a movie called Body.
Whenever I battle, I'm gonna get the bitch boss, and you gonna get the Asian boss, because that's what the audience wants to hear.
Intolerance will not be tolerated!
Get woke, cocksucker!
What you gonna do?
You ready for this?
You're crunchy granola. I can tell by your pungent aroma.
We got bitches, blunts, pregnant prostitutes.
This bitch got a wider gap than the income between white and black.
Are you trying to satirize?
If I did, then would you be satisfied?
Stop rhyming, you little shit.
When I'm done with this soft white rapper, he'll be on lines after typing all lives matter.
Ha ha, white people.
Have either of you guys heard of this movie?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay, well, this movie premiered at Fantastic Fest last year, and I've been basically hearing about this movie since then. Like, people on my Twitter feed who were at Fantastic Fest were so pumped about this movie. Like, I've been hearing about it nonstop since then. This is the new movie from director Joseph Kahn, who is the director of a movie called Detention, which I'm a huge fan of. And he also, a few years later, he did, like, a gritty Power Rangers short that made the rounds on the internet.
I know. Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, so anyway, this movie's awesome. It's a comedy set in the world of battle rap, produced by Eminem. Eminem's a producer on this movie. And the star is Callum Worthy in the lead, who was Alex Tromboli in American Vandal, Mike. Do you remember that name?
He
was
the guy who
pretended to get a hand job. Yeah, that yeah, and it's a movie that's Callum Worthy kind of plays like an Eminem stand-in, where he's like this white kid in the world of battle rap, trying to make a name for himself. But like, you know, it's crazy because this movie is, you know, deeply set in the battle rap world, and it manages to be like super like racist and offensive, but at the same time offer like actual analysis about battle rap and like why it is the way it is and what its place in the world is and like why it exists. It's amazing. It's actually like a really great movie, and it feels like a great like underdog sports story, except it's just people shouting rhymes at each other for the entire movie.
Wow.
I had a blast with it. This movie is fantastic, and it's at a YouTube Premium original right now. So if you go to YouTube and you get a free trial for YouTube Premium, you can watch this movie. I would recommend it. This movie is pretty fantastic. I mean, and it has one of the best cuts of credits, by the way, I've seen in a movie all year, so there's that too.
Better than A Quiet Place?
Yes, I would say better than...
Wow. Wow, big claim, big if true.
I know. Actually, the movie the last movie I'm going to talk about today also has a pretty phenomenal cut to credits, and that is The House That Jack Built. Now, this is the new movie from director Lars von Trier, and this made headlines recently because IFC kind of fudged up the release of this movie a little bit. So what happens is they're going to release an R-rated cut of the movie on December 14th.
Okay.
But for one night only, they were doing theatrical screenings of an unrated director's cut. And luckily, The Roxy, the theater right around the corner of my house, was one of those theaters who was showing this unrated director's cut at The House That Jack Built. So I went to go see it. And this movie has been very divisive. It played at Cannes, and there were walkouts, but there were also people who, you know, stood up and applauded for like 10 minutes. You know, this is a pretty... I love this movie. I thought this was incredible. Lars von Trier is somebody whose work, I'm relatively hit or miss on, but when he hits, I think he hits really hard. I'm a huge fan of Melancholia. That movie's incredible. And this movie stars Matt Dillon as a serial killer, and the film presents itself as a sort of like five or six shorts that depict different murders in his career that build and build into like just this insane climax. Like the way it like ends, it's like it's so Lars von Trier, but it's also like, holy shit, I can't believe he's doing this. And there's a lot in this movie that serves as a metaphor for Lars von Trier's own career and his own... It equates the idea of a serial killer with the idea of an artist, and kind of has von Trier sort of arguing with himself throughout the movie. Like, a lot of the movie is framed with, Matt Dillon talking to Bruno Ganz. And, like, Bruno Ganz takes one side and Matt Dillon takes another side, and, like, it's kind of back and forth on that. And to drive the point home, there's literally a montage of all of Lars von Trier's movies at one point. Like, it's kind of nuts.
That's the most Lars von Trier thing I've ever heard.
It's super self-indulgent, but I loved it. Like, I will say, if you're not into the films of Lars von Trier, I would not recommend this movie. But and it's brutal. This movie is, like, brutal to watch. It's often, like, agonizing, but also very funny a lot of the time. There's a lot of, like, really good dark comedy in this movie. So I would say I would recommend The House of Jack Bill if you are already a fan of Lars von Trier movies. And if you're not, I would recommend staying away from it. But I thought it was pretty incredible. Yeah, and that's what I got, guys. Is there anything else we should talk about, or should we wrap things up and go into Creed 2?
I think it's Creed 2 o'clock. I tried.
I think
it's Creed 8:53 p.m.
All right. That's, on that note, let's go into our featured review of Creed 2.
Victor Drago, son of Ivan Drago, who infamously killed Apollo Creed, appeared today to issue a challenge to Adonis Creed.
Don't do this.
I ain't got a choice.
That's the same thing your father said, and he died right here in my hands. That kid was raised in hate. It's dangerous. He broke things in me that ain't never been fixed. It ain't worth it.
It's not just us anymore, Dave.
I want to rewrite history.
If you want to fight this man, that's your business. But don't pretend this is about your father.
All right, that was from the trailer for Creed 2, the new movie written by Jewel Taylor and Sylvester Stallone and directed by Stephen Caple Jr. It stars Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, Tessa Thompson, Wood Harris, Felicia Rashad, Florian Montenu, and Dolph Lundgren, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Creed 2 reads, "Under the tutelage of Rocky Balboa, heavyweight contender Adonis Creed faces off against Victor Drago, son of Ivan Drago." So, guys, let's do a quick recap of our relationship to the Rocky series. Kyle, we talked about this at the top of the podcast, but you had not seen any of them before the Rocky Marathon.
Nope.
But then I gave you the crash course, and you watched all seven in one day, and now you went to go see Creed 2. Nope. I've been a huge Rocky fan since basically I've been born, as far as I know. I can't remember a time where I didn't love Rocky, and sincerely believe that the original Creed is basically a perfect movie. I watched it again right before I saw this, and can confirm it's still pretty awesome. Now, Mike, I feel like I remember when we reviewed Creed 3 years ago, you said that you had seen, like, bits of the... Like, you'd seen, like, some of the Rocky movies, but not all of them. Is that right?
Yeah. I've seen definitely the first one, and I think the second one, and, like, I guess the fourth one, because that's the one where he ends the Cold War. And, like, I don't really know. It's just, like, these movies are so deeply seated in, like, our pop culture that, like, I can't remember what's what with them anymore. without like, having sat down and done a marathon like you guys have. But, yeah, so I'm definitely not as impassioned as you are, Mike, and I guess not as well-versed as you are, Kyle.
Fair.
Yeah, fair enough. So that said, you know, going into Creed 2, I was, like, excited, but I was also a little bit worried, because Ryan Coogler, who directed the original Creed, left the franchise to go make Black Panther. And he's still producing, but he's not directing anymore. And the series was going in a very fanservice-y kind of direction. You know, so fanservice-y, in fact, I literally said in our review of Creed 3 years ago on the podcast that Creed 2 would be about Adonis Creed fighting the son of Ivan Drago.
No way.
I did. And I was joking then. I was like, yeah, that would be great if that happened.
Wow. Great joke.
And then it turned out Sylvester Stallone is a listener of the podcast, I assume.
Yeah.
Thought, hey, that'd be a great idea.
hey, that'd be a pretty great idea.
Thank you, Bob.
I got you, Mike.
So, yeah, I was a little worried, you know, but I was still pretty excited for it. And now, as we've now seen Creed 2, I don't think it's as good as Creed, but it's still really, really damn good. I don't know. What do you guys think, Kyle?
I was actually listening to... Not to steal your thunder, another movie podcast. And
excuse me.
How dare you?
I'm so sorry. But the guy, they were talking about Creed kind of in passing, and he said that I think Creed 1 is sitting somewhere in the high 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, and Creed 2 is sitting in like the high to mid 80s. And I think that's pretty accurate. I think Creed 2 is like 10% less than Creed 1, because I still enjoyed the shit out of Creed 2. It was so much fun.
All right, cool beans. Now, Mike, as somebody who's not as well versed in the Rocky series, what did you think of Creed 2?
I thought Creed 2 was pretty good. Yeah, like I had a lot of fun with it. It's starting to feel like you know, it's funny for me to say this because I haven't seen all of the other Creed Rocky movies,
right.
But it sort of just feels like, yep, that's a Rocky movie. But like in a good way, you know, I enjoy what that means, right? Like I enjoy a Rocky movie. Definitely, I was blown away by Creed, the original one. So I like had very high hopes, and that's like I guess an impossible bar for this to meet. For like you know, as far as Creed 2 could ever do,
right?
especially when it's a fan servicey joke that you made, like, and that's what the movie is. It's crazy, but like, it's still good. Like, it's still fun. It's still, I'm still enraptured by the family drama outside the ring kind of thing that's going on in all these movies. You know, it's a good time.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it might be because I am an easy mark for the world of Rocky. But like, this somehow, this makes it feel fresh, like, even though it's recycling stuff from other movies. If you're watching it and, like, you're a fan of the Rocky movies, like, you'll notice, like, you know, there's plot points here from Rocky 2 and Rocky 3 and Rocky, like, 5 or whatever, and they all kind of, like, remix into this movie. And it makes it feel like its own thing, which I thought was really remarkable. And it's amazing to me how they've been able to make Rocky 4, which is by far the silliest Rocky movie.
It's Rocky 5. Come on.
Dude, Rocky 5 is probably the worst one, but it's not the silliest one.
Oh, no, it's way sillier. Come on.
Rocky 4 has a robot.
I can see. I forgot about the robot.
Rocky 4 is by far the silliest Rocky movie, and yet they have managed to make it the emotional backbone of two, like, relatively grounded dramas. Like, it's kind of insane.
They just made it not silly anymore. We just don't talk about those parts, and now it's serious.
Pretty much. I would love if they brought up the robot at some point, just to see what's going on. Also, speaking of, I mean, this movie is kind of a direct sequel to Rocky IV. It has the big return of Dolph Lundgren as Ivan Drago. Who is basically not a character in Rocky IV. He has, like, 4 or 5 lines that entire movie. And they're iconic lines, to be sure. You know, if he dies, he dies. I must break you, all that stuff. But he's just a giant guy for Rocky to fight, right? And that's the entire thing of his character. So I was, like, pretty blown away with how they treated Drago in this movie, where this movie not only opens with this wordless scene between Drago and his son that tells you, like, everything you need to know about his current life situation, but then it actually makes him feel like a real person. Who lost everything after that fight with Rocky and looking to reclaim his former glory. And I think a lot of that is in Dolph Lundgren's performance. I think he's, like, great in this movie. Like, how often do you get to say that Dolph Lundgren is great in a movie?
don't kill it.
I was just about to say.
Yeah,
watch that on your recommendation, and he was amazing in that movie.
Yeah, Mike, I feel like you were going to say something while I was passionately talking about Dolph Lundgren. What were you going
to
say?
You know, I think I mostly just was, like, trying to put the pedal to the metal to make a Don't Kill It reference. but I feel like, interesting to your point, that you feel like it rounds out Dolph Lundgren or Ivan? No, wait.
Ivan Drago, yep. Yes.
Yes. I forget which one is which. As a character, like, it rounds him out and makes him feel more full. But to me, like, I mean, maybe it's because I haven't seen Rocky IV or in a long time, if I have actually ever seen it, like, I don't even know. It still sort of feels like he's just, like, a big Russian dude that we're, like, just afraid of. Like, I feel like there's more Victor in this. It's just, like,
Victor is basically a non-character. He's just there.
Yeah, he's just the big dude to punch.
He's there to punch down a screen, but, like,
he kind of rounds out Dolph Lundgren's character. He helps with that anyway.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. You talked me out of it.
All right, fair enough. What do you think, Kyle? Are you on the for your consideration Dolph Lundgren campaign for?
Absolutely. He's just, I think, because, like you said, he's a non-character in Rocky IV, and in this movie, like, it could have been really bad. They could have treated his character in the same way as just a non-character, as just like the foil to Rocky, as Victor is the foil to Adonis. But I thought, for the most part, he was pretty nuanced, and, like, he wasn't this big, scary Russian guy. He just kind of sat off to the side, and he was intimidating, but in the right ways, and not in, like, a goofy way, like he was in Rocky IV.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is that this could have easily gone a very different direction. I think this could have easily been, like, more of a sequel to Rocky IV than it is. Like, it could have been the Rocky and Drago show, and, like, Adonis would have been lost in his own movie, you know? But really, this is, I think, first and foremost, a Creed movie. Like, this feels like it's really about Adonis Creed, and Rocky is a side character, so much so that, like, Rocky disappears for, like, long stretches of this movie.
Yeah, that's actually something that I noticed is, like, you watched Creed 1 right before Creed 2, and I haven't seen Creed 1 since the marathon, but I remember Rocky being in way more.
Yeah.
And then we watched this movie and we got out of it, and I got home and I was like, you know, Rocky really wasn't in a whole lot of that movie.
I think he's in a decent amount of the movie. He's not. Yeah. It's not like he's not in. Like it's not like he just shows up for like one scene at the beginning and one scene at the end or something.
Well, yeah, but
like Jeff Goldblum,
right? Like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, Fallen Kingdom. But you know, Rocky is a presence in the movie, and he's definitely like a significant supporting character. But this is Michael B. Jordan's movie, like, and it's, you know, Adonis Creed's movie, and I am so glad that Michael B. Jordan is the one who took over this role, because you know, I'm just so invested in these characters. Like, I love Sylvester Stallone as Rocky, and like I said, he doesn't have a big role this time around, but he still has like some great moments and a really great arc, I think. But I cannot think of a better person to have taken over this series than Michael B. Jordan. I think he is the perfect like amount of charisma you need for this kind of role. And I'm so invested in his relationship with Bianca for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so into that with you know, this character played by Tessa Thompson. And I think what's interesting about that character, like, there's a character that Heidi Gardner plays on SNL, which she's done a couple times on Weekend Update, which is hilarious, called Every Boxer's Wife in Every Boxing Movie Ever.
You know what? You're here to talk about the news, so let's do that. Okay. Holiday spending is expected to be up this year.
Oh, come on.
Oh, did I say something?
You know, I've been here before with you holiday spending a lot, okay? You're up, and we're happy, and things are good, and then, boom, you're down, okay? And I can't watch that. I know I've worked in a lot of bars in my life, but I deserve to be happy. For my kids, Mikey, Nikki, and Peppers. So, if you're going to do this holiday spending, I'm taking the kids to my sisters.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, I know.
Does Colin know? Colin will be at my sister's.
I'm aware. Yeah, thank you.
And it's very clearly modeled after characters like Amy Adams in The Fighter or Kathy Moriarty in Raging Bull and Adrian in the Rocky movies. Like, it's like an amalgamation of all those characters. And Bianca feels like such a breath of fresh air compared to that. You know, like, you know, like, I love Adrian. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of Adrian. But, you know, Bianca's life is not defined by just being the boxer's wife in these movies.
Yes.
And I love that. Like, she has her own things going on. Her music career has taken off. She's got progressive hearing loss, which means she needs to build upon her musical career now before she's unable to. And at the same time, she has this relationship with Michael B. Jordan. She's about to have a kid. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I just love everything they've done with that character.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice to, in a boxing movie, to just not have the boxer's wife be like, in an abusive relationship with him, right? Like, they are all like a battered wife, and they like, he's got gambling problem. Like, it's the same. It's that character from SNL.
I'm taking,
like,
my kids and my sisters and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. yeah. So it's cool, like, to see a semi, like, normal relationship. Like, there's ups and downs. Like, you know, it's nice. It's just, yeah, it's pretty just nice.
Is that your Stealth Mystery Science Theater reference?
Yes.
There? Is that,
thanks for explaining it.
It's pretty nice. Anyway, yeah. And I want to talk about Stephen Cable Jr., who's the director of this movie. And I think he does a good job directing it. But I did sometimes miss that touch that Ryan Coogler brought to Creed. Because there's nothing as, like, ambitious or awesome as, like, the one-take fight from Creed. Remember that?
All three of them?
Well, there's a couple of one-takes in Creed. But the big, like, the second fight in that movie, which is entirely one-take.
Yeah,
you know, that's the one I was talking about. Like, that's incredible. It's so cool. Yeah, but, you know, the fights are great in this movie. They make you feel the weight of the punches, which I loved. I love the sound design in this movie. And by the end, the movie does what most of the Rocky movies do, and that means it made me cry.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think I cried, but the last, like, big fight during the movie, I could feel myself, like, getting more and more tense. Yeah. Like, I was just sitting there, and I'm, like, holding on to the seat. And then, I mean, the guy next to me is annoying the hell out of me. But I'm just like, I was feeling really stressed out.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we move on to spoilers for Creed 2?
No, I think I did miss Ryan Coogler a lot, though. There were a couple times where I was like, this could have been better. Like, as far as directions and cinematography and all that stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, that's all. I would like to agree with your statement, Mike.
But he's off making Black Panther movies now, so, you know. I guess. I don't think he'll be back anytime soon, which is a shame, because I like Black Panther. I think it's pretty good, but, you know, Creed is, to me, like so much better than Black Black Panther. I would love if he came back for Creed 3. Also, speaking of, before we actually move into spoilers, Sylvester Stallone has said that this will be his last time playing Rocky Balboa.
Really?
You guys hadn't heard that?
No. I hadn't heard that.
Oh, he said that like after the movie opened. It was like on Instagram. There was like a post that he did with Michael B. Jordan, and it was kind of like a speech that he was giving at like a rap party or something, and like saying like I've played this character for 40 years and all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't like definitively say this will be his last time playing Rocky, but that's the kind of gist that you get out of it. And he's also kind of at the same time, he's also just finished filming the new Rambo movie, Rambo Last Blood, which by the way, amazing title.
I completely forgot about that.
And he kind of did the same thing where he was like saying this is probably my last time playing Rambo and that kind of stuff. So do you think this is a good final movie for Rocky to go out on if this is truly the end of Rocky Balboa?
Yes and no. Yes, because I think it wrapped up his character really nicely at the end.
We're not in spoilers yet. So
I know we're not in spoilers yet, but like what happened with Rocky's character I thought was really nice. I guess it kind of felt definitive. And, like, this is the end of Rocky, but, oh, man, I'd be so sad to see him go. I want more Creed movies, and I know I'm getting more Creed movies, but I want Rocky. I want him there. I don't want him to Mickey and just die halfway through.
Well, that was my fear. And, like, that was, like, I figured if Stallone kept doing these movies, I feel like at some point they would have had to do something like that, like kill Rocky off on screen. And I don't think I would have been able to take that.
Yeah. I hope they Adrian him instead and just do it in between movies.
Yeah. Or they don't have to kill him off at all, Kyle. You could just have Rocky not be there.
Yeah, but then where's Rock?
Yeah, but then we'll be asking, where is he? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So we'll see what happens with that. But Mike, do you think this is a good ending for Rocky if this is it?
I would accept this as an ending, yes. Yeah, I think it is a good one. Like, yeah, I would like some more closure, like maybe some more, like some cameos in the next one where it's just like, oh, look, it's him. Okay, cool. And like, that's all.
Well, there's a little bit of that in this movie, too. There's some cameos from characters I didn't expect to see. But I think this is a good ending, and I really like the way this movie ends with Rocky, where his character kind of wraps up. I will say, if they had ended it like Creed 2 did not have Rocky in it, and Rocky's last movie was Creed, I think that movie would have been a better ending for Rocky. I think this movie kind of wraps up the loose ends from that thread, but the way that movie ends with Rocky, he has that cancer arc throughout the movie, and he beats it, and Creed helps him beat it, and then towards the end of the movie, the very last shot of the movie is Adonis and Rocky going up the iconic steps once again, kind of looking out on the sunset, and it's just a beautiful image, and it would have been the perfect like note to end Rocky's arc on throughout these movies. So I think if they were going to end it, Creed probably would have been the way to go. But they went with Creed 2, and I think there is a solid ending for Rocky in this movie too, if it really is his last time. But yeah, on that note, should we move into spoilers, guys?
I think
let's
it's time.
Do it.
All right, it's time for spoilers for Creed 2, starting right now.
Stop it! Both of you, you're spoiling everything!
All right, so spoilers for Creed 2, starting right now. So I think the most affecting thing about this movie for me is that it wrestles with the idea that Rocky should have thrown in the towel during Apollo's fight with Drago in Rocky 4. And that's something that the other movies haven't really dealt with. And in retrospect, that seems weird. Like,
yeah.
I think there's a little bit of that in Rocky 4, where Rocky's like, man, I should have thrown in the towel. But then, they have to get to the next montage so he can fight Ivan Drago.
Right.
You know? I don't know if you've seen Rocky IV in a while, but that movie is 90% montage. It's insane. By the way, the montages in this movie are pretty great, too.
They're very good.
This movie kind of wrestles with the idea that Rocky has been holding that guilt in with his entire life of not having thrown in the towel during that fight with Apollo and Drago, where Apollo was killed by Drago. And so then to have Drago throw in the towel during the final fight with Creed, that was chef's kiss, like moi. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. I loved it. I was completely caught off guard by that. It was a very unexpected way for this movie to end, and I think the perfect way to end that story.
That's the part that like really, like that's when I was like for your consideration, Dolph Lundgren. Like that just like bringing his whole character around and bringing him to that point, it just like completely humanized him. And because up until that point in the movie, he was so, you have to win this for us so we can go home and like take this back. And
right.
And at the end, he didn't care about that. He cared about his son.
Yeah, it was beautiful, man. It's beautiful. Mike, what do you think?
Real nice.
Yeah, sure. No, I did think that was a nice reversal on that, you know, the problem, the guilt that's been racking Rocky for 40 years or whatever. Well, I guess not 40 years, but you know what I mean? Yeah. For most of his life and the whole reason he wouldn't be with Creed for the first fight and all this stuff, you know, and then to have it come back and Drago's the one that finally has to do it. It was a nice touch. I did like it.
Yes.
I guess I didn't pick up on the, humanizing part of that, which is weird on my part. I don't know what happened to my brain. But yeah, it was good. It's a good touch.
Cool. And yeah, I mean, that final fight is pretty awesome. It's just a great fight sequence. And the moment in the fight where, Creed starts to win. these movies are so good at making me think, like, oh man, Rocky's going to lose this one.
Because he loses the first one, so it's possible.
Well, that's the thing. He loses in the first one, and he loses in the sixth one, actually. And Creed loses in Creed also, actually. But it's, you know, they do lose sometimes, but whenever they lose, it's like, they lose, but they really win. You know,
yeah, they lose because the judges are corrupt.
Well, they usually lose because it's a split decision, so it's like the tie goes to the heavyweight champion, and if they're not the champion at the time, then whatever. But anyway, like, even if they lose, they went the distance, and so they kind of win in that way. Like, it's still inspirational when they lose.
Yeah.
So every movie makes me think, like, oh man, what if they lose? But then, like, you know, this fight's going on, and like, Adonis is like getting his ass kicked at first, and then, you know, he gets one good punch on Victor Drago, and the slow motion kicks in, and the Rocky theme starts playing for the first time in the movie.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's so
goosebumps.
Like, so good. And the first Creed does that too, where like they don't play the Rocky theme until the moment where Creed gets knocked down and then stands up again, and they don't expect him to stand up, and they play the Rocky theme, and it's crazy. And both these movies are scored by Ludwig Göransson, who actually used to do the music for Community.
What?
Yes, and did the score for Black Panther, by the way.
Nice.
He's a really talented composer. Yeah, I think he knows how to perfectly execute that Rocky theme in a way that will give it the most impact. And I want to give a shout out to that because that's pretty awesome.
Is it the moment right before that when does Creed get knocked down right before that? And the ref is asking him, what's your name? And he's like shouting Creed at him. And he does it a couple times.
Yeah.
And then he knocks down Drago, and then the Rocky theme kicks in, and it was like,
I'm pretty sure we had applause in our theater.
Yeah.
We had applause every time. Every time Adonis got like a good punch in, like our entire theater erupted in applause. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
It was like being back at the marathon, honestly. Because remember, it was like, you know, everybody would cheer for everything that happened in the movies. Like every time anything inspirational would happen, anytime the Rocky theme would come on, people would be singing along to the songs from the montages. Like when Rocky IV kicks on and Hearts of Fire starts going, it's like, Hearts of Fire. Like the entire theater would be singing it. It was just, again, the Rocky Marathon, just an amazing experience all around.
Wow.
It's like one of my top 10 life experiences. Just throwing it out there. But yeah, I also want to give a shout out to Creed's entrance for the final fight, which was fucking dope.
Oh, that was so cool.
With Bianca singing and like the lasers and shit. It was really cool. I have no more to add to that other than it was fucking awesome.
Yes, correct. And his entrance for the first one. Those actually were like pretty experimental and weird. Cause like it goes black, like there's nothing on screen, and then like I don't know, it was cool.
Yeah, and I love that it has, like, it shows that, like, Adonis has, like, his father's flair for showmanship also, because, like, Apollo would do the kind of big entrances. In Rocky IV, he does the whole Living in America sequence with James Brown there and everything,
right.
And that's, like, the whole thing, and that's really goofy, but this, like, it kind of shows that, like, he still has that kind of, like, that showmanship aspect to him that Apollo had, which is pretty cool. Want to mention some characters who make cameos in the movie. First off, Andre Ward returns as Stuntman Wheeler, who was in the first Creed. And in the original Creed, he fights Adonis, towards the beginning in a training session, and Adonis like bets his bets his car. I have said Volkswagen. It's probably not a Volkswagen.
It's a Mustang.
It's a Mustang. He bets his Mustang, and he loses it to Stuntman Wheeler. And this movie opens up with a rematch between the two of them, except Stuntman Wheeler is now the heavyweight champion of the world. And so it's this big match between like the heavyweight champion and Adonis, and Adonis wins this time, and all he cares about is the car, which which I thought was pretty great. That was a nice callback to the first movie, I thought.
Don't a lot of the Rocky movies like start mid fight from the last one, right?
A lot of them do, yeah. This one did not, and I thought that was interesting. This movie starts it starts with that scene with Ivan and Victor training in Russia.
Right.
But then it cuts over to Creed, and it's showing him become the heavyweight champion of the world, which is also different, because usually that happens at the end of a Rocky movie, if that is supposed to happen, you know?
Yeah.
One thing that we haven't even touched on is Creed and Bianca's baby.
Yes. Have a baby in this movie.
Yeah, but, like, being born deaf, and...
Oh, yeah.
How that, like, affects Creed...
Yeah, no, I am with you. That is it's a very, I think one of the things I liked most about this movie is that it has this unifying theme of family and fathers and sons. And so you have Ivan and Victor Drago, and you have Rocky and his son in the movie, too, Milo Ventimiglia, who makes a brief appearance towards the end. He was in Rocky VI, by the way. And, like, you have the idea of Adonis trying to live up to his own father's legacy, but also trying to... becoming a father himself and dealing with everything that comes with that. I think Michael B. Jordan and Tessa Thompson are both just pretty incredible in those sequences and, like, everything about the baby. It's heartbreaking, you know, but it's... The movie does kind of end with, like, a note of hope. Like, they gave the baby hearing aids and seems like it's going to be okay, theoretically.
I don't know how, like, what I was feeling in those, like, that sequence. Because that's sort of post the first fight, so he's, like, in his depressive phase, like, kind of thing before he starts training again, and he's, like, listless, and he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, this was after. So, yeah, there's the first fight between the heavyweight champion, or between Stuntman and Creed. And then there's the first fight between him and Victor Drago, where Victor wins. He gets disqualified.
Yeah.
But, like, he basically won. Is what it kind of plays it off as. And Rocky wasn't there for him. And so, yeah, he goes into this depressive funk and all that, and then he starts training again, and Rocky becomes his trainer again, and they go and win the fight. But, yeah. That kind of... I watched it over Thanksgiving, so it's been, like, 2 weeks since I've seen the movie. I'm pretty sure they have the baby, like, right before or right after that fight.
I think right after.
Yeah, it was right after. They have the baby once... Rocky comes back and Creed and had like made up, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think they know the baby's coming before the fight though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's like the baby being like it's like the way the movie kind of ties together his relationship with Rocky and the baby kind of together at the same point. But yeah, no, the baby's going to have a rough go, man. It's going to be it's going to be tough, but they are they're fighters. They're going to survive.
Yeah. More generic, inspirational dialogue. Great.
I can't deny that, but, like, fuck you.
I mean, it's effective. It works.
It works. Like I said, Milo Ventimiglia comes back from Rocky VI to play Rocky's son, and that is kind of the big arc for Rocky in this movie, is that he gets to reunite with his son and meet his grandson for the first time. And I thought that was a really great way to, if this is the end of Rocky's arc in these movies, I think that's a really nice note to go out on.
And the kid looked exactly like Adrian, which was freaky.
Yeah, the moment when Rocky asks if he wants to play catch, I was just like, no. Like, that's when it started.
Right, fair enough. And also, Brigitte Nielsen is in this movie.
Yeah.
For coming back as Ludmilla Drago, the wife of Ivan Drago, who they established left after the fight in Rocky IV and ditched them forever. That was an unexpected cameo. I did not see that one coming.
No, not at all.
But it was pretty cool. I liked seeing her, and it really hammers home, like, her presence really hammers home how much Drago and his son lost everything after the Rocky IV fight. Mm. That was cool. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I never thought about what Drago did after Rocky IV once. Like, ever.
Nope.
And this movie made me care about it. And I think that's a... And that's kind of interesting how I was able to do that.
I did love in that scene when they're at, like, that banquet or whatever they're at, when Brigitte Nielsen comes in, how everyone is in, like, fine attire and like military uniforms, and Victor Drago's in like a sweatsuit. I don't know why I noticed that, but it was amazing.
Yeah, well, he's a boxer. He's training, man. That's
Let's go with that.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I did want to give a shout-out to the scene in the diner where Drago shows up for the first time and confronts Rocky, right, and challenges them to the match. Like, that's just so good.
Oh,
man. And it's the only real scene that, like, Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone have, like, together in the movie. They're in the ring together at certain points, but, like, it's the only, like, real scene they have. And it's just, it's so good watching those guys go back and forth. Like, because, I mean, I feel like you can feel the shared experience on the screen. Like, those guys have been together, like, making movies forever. Rocky IV was Dolph Lundgren's first movie. Stallone kind of gave him that shot, so to speak. And, like, Lundgren and Sloan have worked together later on. I think he was in the Expendables movies, too, I think.
Yep.
And so you get the sense of, like, these actors who have known each other for a very long time. It kind of gives history and weight to these characters who have hated each other for, you know, 3-4 decades at this point. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, and that scene, I forget what it is, what the movie's cutting back to. Because this movie does a really good job drawing comparisons between Creed and Victor and Rocky and Ivan. Where I forget, like, during that conversation, it's cutting back and forth between Creed doing something and that conversation with Ivan and Rocky. And I can't remember exactly what it is, but this movie does a lot of that. Like, even the montages, like, we see the different montages, which I guess happens in the other movies a lot, too. Yeah, I don't know. It does go to great lengths to show you what the Dragos are doing and, like, what they're going through, which I thought was pretty interesting.
I mean, if this is the last time that Sloan is playing Rocky, then we can assume that Creed 3 will happen without him. And I'm curious what you guys, where you think Creed 3 could go from here. I mean, now we've had, you know, the big, the rags-to-riches story of Adonis Creed, right? And then you have the revenge story, where he's taken down the son of the guy who killed his father. Where does Creed 3 go from this point forward?
Street fighting, obviously.
Street fighting? jump straight to Rocky V.
Exactly. Come on.
I saw an article on Screen Crush that pitched a few ideas for Creed 3, and like some of them were pretty bad. Like, I think it said something about like the son of Clever Lang comes back, and
that was my first thought. Not gonna lie.
Clever Lang was the Mr. T from the third one, Mike. If that's
got it.
You out.
Yes. Well, I had a question. Who is Creed's trainer for the first fight with Ivan? Because he's another son of somebody that is
He's the son of Apollo's trainer.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I was like, I can't remember what character that is. So there we go.
Son of the son.
Yeah, he was in the first Creed also. He is the son of Apollo's trainer. I think it's weird that like all of these sons just happen to be doing what their fathers did also. But like, you know, whatever.
Don't you know that's how the world works? Still.
Was it right.
That's why I'm the blacksmith.
If they're going to continue doing these Creed movies without Rocky, then I think they have to start breaking into new territory and like not bring back Clubber Lang and not bring back street fighting and not bring back this and this and this. I don't know where exactly they should go, but I know it has to be some new territory they can't keep falling back on.
Exactly.
Rocky, because if Rocky's not there, it's not going to work.
Right. Not going to work. I feel like they sort of lay the groundwork for that with Creed and Bianca moving back to L.A. They leave Philly. Like, we finally get away from that. So there is the opportunity that Rocky, you know, like, we will be less likely to ask, where's Rock, if we're not in Philly the whole time.
Right. It's like in Venom, they had that in San Francisco instead of New York, so you're not asking, where's Spider-Man the entire time?
Yeah, but I like that. I think that is a nice progression for these characters, some growth finally.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, I just gave myself an idea. Creed 3 should be fighting Venom.
But specifically Eddie Brock.
No, I wanted to fight Venom.
Oh, okay, got it.
Or Tom Hardy kind of going back and forth between Eddie Brock and Venom in the ring.
In the ring.
I would watch that movie, though.
I know, it'd be so good. I did see one idea on the Screen Crush article that I liked, which is actually, I think, kind of cool. I guess there was a recent boxing match. It was like an exhibition match between a boxer and an MMA fighter. And
I don't follow
the sport that well. But
it was Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather.
That's what it was, yeah. And somebody pitched, like, why don't they do that in Creed 3? Like, that would kind of be, like, that would kind of be crazy. If,
yeah.
Because they would have Adonis having to train to, like, face off against all these new techniques that he's not prepared for and that kind of thing. Like, it could be pretty cool. So just throwing that out there, I think that'd be a cool idea for Creed 3, if that is the case.
We know you're listening.
Sylvester Stallone, I know you're listening. Come on.
Well, Stallone's out, man. It's Michael B. Jordan from here on out.
That's true. Well,
Sly, just tell Michael to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So, is there anything else in the movie you guys wanted to bring up, or should we wrap things up?
I want to shout out the dope ass desert training montage.
Oh, yes. I mean, so good.
We did mention that the montages are cool in the movie, but yes, the desert montage is pretty cool and kind of recalls the montage from Rocky IV, where it's Rocky in the snow. But he's doing all these, like, kind of old school training techniques where he's, like, you know, running with, like, logs and stuff up the mountain. And that's kind of what Creed's doing here, just in the desert.
That literally just clicked for me. That Rocky IV, the montage was in the winter in the mountains.
You call yourself a Rocky fan.
I thought that's a really cool, I guess, counterpoint to that montage.
Yeah, and I mean, both montages also kind of cut back between Creed and Drago and Rocky and Drago, and like showing that like the Dragos are doing their own thing. And I think in Rocky IV it's like all like modern technology and stuff, but I think in this movie it's not. I'm trying to remember. It's been a couple. I got to see Creed 2 again. Basically, I actually wanted to go see it again this past weekend and it just didn't work out. I ended up seeing Wreck-It Ralph 2 instead, and it was pretty good. But I kind of wish I'd seen Creed 2 again. So take that for what it's worth. But yes, yeah, so the montage, very good. Anything else, guys?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Cool beans. Then I guess let's wrap this up. Creed 2, I think we were all fans. I was a huge fan. Kyle, I know you liked it a lot. And Mike, it sounds like you also enjoyed it. Maybe not on the level that me and Kyle did, but it sounds like you were a fan too.
Still good.
All right. Cool beans. So, Kyle, where can we find you online this week?
Don't find me online.
Okay.
Well, what
don't follow me.
Fair enough.
I have nothing you want.
Is there anything you want to plug?
You know, maybe when you have me on the podcast again for the next Mission Impossible movie that comes out.
Who knows when that's going to be?
When's the next episode for family season?
Okay, so whatever movie lines up with the next season of FS for Family, hopefully by then I'll have some new music out with a new band that I have in the works. So
ooh,
I'll plug that then.
But you can't, you're not at liberty to discuss at this point?
I would discuss more if I had more to discuss.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
All right, and you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. And Kyle, I know this is where you usually check out of the podcast, so if you want to leave early, that's fine.
No, I'll stay. I'll stay.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio and Kyle Cullen, who, by the way, is the guy who sings all our theme songs. I haven't mentioned that yet today, I don't think, so just throwing that out there. Credit where it's due. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Feedback, compliments, topic discussions, hate mail can always send directly to you, podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, you know, about the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us. Mike, you're mocking me.
It's been so
visually.
Long since we've broken during these.
Anyway, yeah, we would love to hear from you. Join us in a couple weeks. We're going to be back with another episode. I don't know exactly what we're going to review. Here's the thing, okay, about
what
the movies being released in December, is that they're all coming out on the same day.
Oh, God.
So I don't know if you've looked ahead at the schedule for December yet, Mike, but on the 21st, like the weekend of like the 19th through the 21st, like that 3-day span, that's Aquaman, Bumblebee, Mary Poppins Returns, all those movies out at the same time.
Wow.
And that's after when we would be doing the next podcast. In the meantime, the only really big movie that we would have to discuss would be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. The problem, and I would love to talk about that movie, is that Nicolas Cage is in it.
Yeah.
And so we should probably wait for the Complete Works episode to talk about Spider-Man, you know?
Or you just talk about it on both podcasts.
We talk about it on this podcast, and then for the Complete Works, we just cut out the rest of the episode, and we just repost the same.
I feel like that'd be kind of lame.
It would be, you're right.
But, yeah, so we're trying to figure that out. I was thinking maybe, like, a Netflix original we could talk about, like, The Battle of the Western Shrugs, which I talked about in a discussion a while back, but I'm not sure if you've watched yet.
No.
So, Kyle, I know you've watched it. I made you watch it. There's that. We can also talk about Roma, the new Alfonso Cuarón movie, which opens up on the 14th. And actually, Roma is playing in the theater near my house, so I'm going to go get to see it in the theater instead of on Netflix. Nice. I'm very excited about that.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we'll come back with a review of something. But I'm looking ahead at the schedule, and, like, that week that, like, you know, Aquaman, Bumblebee and stuff come out, like, I'm going to be back home for Christmas, and I probably won't have my laptop with me, so I'm not sure if we'll be able to do a podcast for either of those movies. Genuinely, like, because when I come back from it, it's going to be the new, it's going to be 2019, and we're going to have to do our top 10 episode.
So are you saying this is the last film book cast of 2018?
No, I'm saying there's going to be one more film book cast in 2018. It just won't be Aquaman or Bumblebee. And we don't know what it is yet.
But it will possibly be the last film together. Cast to feature Sylvester Stallone.
It'll almost definitely be the last film book cast
it's breaking
of
my
this
heart.
Year, anyway. Because you never know. We'll do a Last Blood episode.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, fine.
Anyway, so yeah, we'll figure out what we're doing hopefully soon. Also, next week we've got a new Complete Works coming where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2013's The Frozen Ground. And that'll probably be our last Complete Works of 2018 as well, looking ahead of the schedule. So yeah, looking forward to that. You know, crime thriller, Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, Vanessa Hudgens, 50 Cent is in that movie.
What could go wrong?
I know, pretty excited about that. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.